Hare Krishna, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయ చరణారవింద భక్తి వేదాంత గోస్వామి మహారాశీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం. నిత్రిలా ప్రవిష్టోం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాశీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్ కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధా కుండగిరి గోవర్ధానకి బృందావన్ ధామ్ కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్ కి మధురపురి ధామ్ కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్ కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్ కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సమవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమనంది. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Prajarini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshadharini.
Mohan, can you increase that volume a bit?
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय संसार सागरे मग्नम दीनम मां करुणानिधे कर्मग्राह्य गृहीतांगम मां उद्धर भवार्णवाल श्रीमल भागवदाख्योयम् प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशवाम् भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यदप्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वभाव प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयादितरदश्चार्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वराल् तेने ब्रह्म हृदा य आदिगवये मुह्यन्दियल् सूरयाम् तेजो वारिमृदम् यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृष धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहगम् सत्यम् परम् धीमहि धर्म प्रोज्जित कैदवोऽत्र परमो निर्मल्सराणाम् सदाम् वेद्यम् वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदम् तावत्त्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा वरै ईश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्यदेत्र कृतिभि शुश्रूषुभि तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पदरोर्गलितम् फलम् शुकमुखादमृदन्द्रिवसं युदम् पिबदा भागवतम् रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नुमाम् यम् प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदमभेदकृत्यम् द्वैपायनो विरहकातरमजुहाव पुत्रेदि तन्मयदया तरवोऽभिनेदु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिदिदीर्षदम् तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूनुम् उपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम् नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भदा मुरारेर्मधुरीम् न कनिकाभि कापिकाभिम् नमाम् विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवि गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषाशून्यवादि पाश्चात्या देशतारिणे श्रीमल् गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्याम् नमः वन्दे नन्दम् व्रजस्त्रीणाम् पादरेणुमभीष्णश यासाम् हरिगदोल्गीतम् पुनाति भुवनत्रयम् गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरम् करविराजितचक्रशङ्खम् कौमोदगी सरसिजम् करुणासमुद्रम् राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासम् वातालये शमनिशम् हृदि भावयामि कोमलम् कूजयन् वेणुम् श्यामलोऽयम् कुमारका वेदवेद्यपरम् ब्रह्म भासदाम् पुरतो ममाम् मूकम् करोति वाचालम् பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரிம் எல் கிருபாதமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம். ஓம் ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ணாய நம, ஸ்ரீமதி ராதிகாயே நம, சர்வத்ர கோவிந்த நாம சங்கீர்த்தனம். கோவிந்த கோவிந்தம். So we were discussing last Sunday the solar dynasty mentioned in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Parikshit Maharaj was asking Sukadev Goswami about certain members of this royal family. Maharaj Parikshit was very keen to know who were the prominent members in the solar dynasty and what was their special activities which was related to their administration. So in that process, Sri Shugan or Sudev Goswami told Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit, that in this long solar dynasty we have so many great personalities appeared, but due to the pressure of time, that they had shortage of time, that he would only talk about some of the very important kings and their activities in a limited way. And that is how in the ninth canto the Manvantara Katha or different Manu's time has been discussed. So Manvantara Katha and Ishanu Katha, in other words, because in the ninth canto, the appearance of Lord Ramchandra is discussed there in the ninth canto. So therefore, Ishanu Katha has also importance there. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has appeared in the form of Lord Ramchandra, and his activities, Sukadeva Goswami in Srimad Bhagavatam explained in two chapters. He took two chapters to discuss the activities of Lord Ramchandra. And the difference between when Valmiki wrote Ramayanam and when Sukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a great difference. Valmiki's Ramayanam is considered to be, in relationship with Ramachandra, a great historical importance. In other words, when Valmiki compiled Ramayanam, in his mind he wanted to explain the whole activities of Ramachandra and the associated pastimes with it. But somehow or the other, the expert's opinion is, or the scholar's opinion on this subject is, that when Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote Srimad Bhagavatam Ramayanam again, there is another Ramayanam which Vedavyasa Maharshi has compiled known as Adhyatma Ramayanam. This Adhyatma Ramayanam is about 6,000 verses compared to 24,000 verses in the Valmiki's Ramayanam. But from the spiritual point of view and also from the point of devotion, this Adhyatma Ramayanam is considered to be more significant than in the Valmiki's original Ramayanam. This is the difference, because if you study any Vedic literature, whether it is Srimad Bhagavatam or Ramayanam, ultimately, by studying that literature, if your devotion for Krishna has increased a little bit, even a little bit it has increased, then the effort is worthwhile. All that effort is worthwhile. Because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, when Srinarada Muni asked Lord Brahma that how he should present the Srimad Bhagavatam to this world, Brahmaji instructed Srinarada Muni how to present the Srimad Bhagavatam in this world. And that instruction has not changed even today. It is valid even today also. The same instruction. That Yatha Harer Bhagavati Nranam Bhaktir Bhavishyati. That was the instruction. Discuss Krishna's activities in such a way, Brahmaji told Narada Muni. Discuss it in such a way that Yatha Harer Bhagavati Nranam Bhaktir Bhavishyari, that somehow or the other, let it develop a little bit of attachment for Krishna in the heart of the listener. So that is the goal of all these things, whether it is Ramayanam or Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature. The goal of all this literature is to bring the devotee closer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. If it is not happening, then that effort is not worthwhile. It is not helping. That is why it's sent here. Yadha harer bhagavati nrinam bhaktir bhavishyadi sarvalpanyakila adharam idhi sangalpavarnaya. That Krishna, Brahma said to Narada Muni, that the basis of all the Vedic knowledge, all the Vedic literature, everything, the underlying principle is Krishna. So if you do not explain Krishna properly, that yadha harer bhagavati nrinam bhaktir bhavishyadi sarvalpanyakiladharam idhi sangalpavarnayam. Keeping that as the basis of everything, keep discussing about Krishna in detail. And it is on the basis of this that Sri Narada Muni instructed Vedavyasa Maharshi in 3 chapters, Srimad Bhagavatam, which he received from Lord Brahma in 4 verses. So the 4 verses what he got from Brahma, he expanded that and given to Vedavyasa Maharshi in 3 chapters, who further expanded that into 18,000 verses and in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vedavyasa Maharshi, knowing very well this principle, when he took Valmiki, Lord Ramachandra, Ramakatha or Ramachandra story, he made very sure in Adhyalpa Ramayanam, in 6,000 verses, he presented Lord Ramachandra as the perfect personality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appeared in the Tridayugam. So that is what we are going to come to that. But prior to Ramachandra's story, we have so many other kings that is mentioned there. Like we were discussing previously, we discussed about that sage, Saubhari, what happened to Saubhari. Saubhari married Mandhadav's daughters. 50 daughters, he married them. And then eventually one day he came to his senses. He realized that sense gratification is not the goal. And so he decided to give it up and eventually perform penances and go back to the spiritual world. So like this, throughout in the Ramayanam, or throughout in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find when discussing this ninth canto, particularly in the ninth canto, that there is so many underlying instructions which Vedavyasa Maharshi and Sri Yuga Maharshi has not forgotten to mention at different instances. Like when we discussed Ambarish Maharaj's story, we heard what was happening to Ambarish Maharaj, how Durvasa Muni offended Ambarish Maharaj, and the result was that Durvasa Muni eventually had to apologize to Ambarish Maharaj and eventually was saved by the devotee. So after that, the Saubhari Maharshi story, we talked about it. Now, why all these stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Basically because, particularly in this world, our attachment to different things are well known. Nobody has to tell us how attached each one of us are, is it? Is there any need for anybody to tell us about our own attachment? We know what's our attachment is, what we have, what all kinds of material desires we have in our heart, and what kind of desires are going to develop tomorrow, which we do not know yet, and or in the future. So this is our position. This mind is such that it has altered due to its conditioning, strong conditioning in this world, due to association with the 3 modes of material nature, develops all kinds of material desires. So the result of all that is that in the Vedic times, the sages knew very well the problem. Problem is this attachment. And as long as this attachment is very strong with the material world, it is difficult to think about going back to the spiritual world. Because more or less, many of our thinking will be, most of us will think, if I can manage somehow, by some adjustment, a comfortable life in this world today, I will rather have that rather than thinking about the spiritual world. This is why in the second canto, Sri Yuga Maharshi specifically discussed this. He said that even if one has material desires, no material desires, or one is seeking for liberation, everyone should surrender to the Supreme Personality, Krishna. So like this he mentioned there. So this material desires is there in everyone. But the difference is, there are 2 things one has to remember here. That one hand, the material desires disturb a person's desire for going back to spiritual life. This is always there. that as long as, so long as these material desires are there, your approach towards Krishna will also be based on that relationship. That my, at least let me have this today, or let me have this facilities in this world, so that tomorrow I will execute spiritual life when I am in a position to do that. So this kind of thoughts will come to the human mind. It's a nature of the human mind that one cannot change it. So when these desires are causing problems, these desires manifest in different forms in everybody. And when these desires manifest in different forms, in a very subtle way, in an unknowing manner, these will take him away from the path of spiritual realization. That is also a fact. That is why Shastras have analyzed all these things to such a depth that they will tell you openly that these things are problems for these varnas and these ashramas. That is how they present that. So in the varnashrama dharmam also, in the grahastha ashram particularly, where there is a higher possibility of attachment to this material world compared to a brahmachari or a sannyasi, that they have already indicated that eshanatrayam will always be there. Eshanatrayam means the three kinds of attachments what a householder has to this world. Now, when you read these things from the Srimad Bhagavatam, when you read all these things in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one in the modern world is automatically tend to think that, is this all what they say in the Bhagavatam? How can this be true? Because the modern life is so different from the lifetime what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, sometimes while applying these principles, what mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam to our own modern lifestyle, we may find it a little bit confusing, or it is contradicting, or it's causing a little difficulty to understand it in real terms. The reason for that is that when Varnashrama Dharma institution prevailed, or when Krishna has instructed this Varnashrama Dharma, and when society was molded in that way, the goal of all the Varnas and Ashramas were ultimately one. That was to go back home, back to Krishna. So with that in the goal, they have structured the Ashrama Dharmam and Varna Dharmam. Or in other words, the different Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, Brahmajari, Grastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyasam was such that eventually it will bring him closer to the spiritual goal. So that goal was there. Now, even in Grahastha Ashram, householder life, where there is a higher possibility of getting attracted by the material world or material nature, Shastra says this eshanatrayam, or these three things, are very serious problems. Very serious problem means every householder works in this world for few reasons. One, that is for acquiring wealth, material wealth. That is one of the goals of in the householder life. Secondly, the goal of having a comfortable wife with a comfortable life with the family. That desire is also there. And third, the attachment builds up in the heart of the householder with the children. So therefore, eshanatrayam it is referred to as that children, wife and wealth. These are the three things which are closer to the heart of a householder. Now, if you want to see the proof of this, you can take Bhagavad Gita and have a look at Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna says about this. While Krishna was talking about the qualities of the devotees and qualities of a divine personality, Krishna mentioned certain things. I think it is in the 13th chapter. There also you will see Krishna bringing these three items, or these three, children, wife and wealth. Again, Krishna is brought up in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says there, Indriyarteshu vairagyam anahangaramevaja janmam mrityu jara vyadhi dukha doshanu darshanam asakti anabhishvanga putradara grihadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishtobhavatishu. Krishna says there that asakti anabhishvanga, one who wants to advance on the spiritual path, Krishna says, one has to be careful about these things. And he has listed a number of things. Amanitvam adambitvam, ahimsa chandirarjavam, acharyopasanam shaucham, sairyam alpavinigraha, indriyarteshu vairagyam, anahangaramevaja, janmam mrityujaravyadhi, dukkhadoshanudarshanam, asakti anabhishvanga, putradara grihadishu, nityam jasamachittatvam, ishtanishtopavartishu. So Krishna says here that if you want to advance on the spiritual side, he is very straight about that in these verses. Asakti anabhishvanga, no attachment. Attachment is the cause, Krishna says. This is where the problem starts. Putradara grihadishu, the same three things, Eshanatrayam as referred to in the Bhagavadam, Krishna has mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita is putradara grihadishu, children, wife and wealth. So it doesn't mean that only man has got attachment. The other way also it works. For the, from wife side, if you say children, husband and wealth. So it works both sides. It's very equally distributed. Putradara grihadishu, nityam ja samajit tattvam. That Krishna says there that one who wants to develop on the spiritual side, he must develop this quality of samachitada, not being affected by their desires. Ishta anishta opavattishu. So sometimes things which are favorable or which are pleasing may happen in life. Sometimes please things which are not very pleasing will happen. Or sometimes some things will be very pleasing to the person. But in all these circumstances, Krishna says, one should be able to keep his mind under in equilibrium, unaffected by these things, what is going around in the householder's life. So it looks that from Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita that these three things can cause problems for a householder in some time or the other. And to illustrate this fact, in the Srimad Bhagavadam, in these different stories, Sri Shuka Maharshi wanted to tell Parikshit, this is what was causing the problem for Saubhari. Saubhari's case, what was that? Saubhari wanted to have a householder life. After leaving everything, performing hundreds of years of penances, and going so high in spiritual path, Saubhari, his desire came back to him to come back to this family life. So you can imagine what is our position then. That if it had happened to Saubhari like this, how strong that attachment in our heart, and how difficult it is to break that knot of attachment from the heart. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out through this story of the Saubhari Maharshi. Saubhari could not give it up. That suddenly that desire came up in his heart just by seeing the relationship between another species, he got disturbed. Not even in the human species, another species. He got disturbed and this desire, he came to him, why shouldn't I have a family life? So that is how that strong that desire is. So when this happened to Saubhari Maharshi, and then he decided he wanted to get married, but because he was a powerful sage, he could go back to the king, Manthadav, and Manthadav later on offered his daughters in marriage, and we discussed that, how Saubhari got married, and for a long time, he could not come out of it. In other words, his going back home, back to spiritual world has been delayed. If it's delayed, doesn't matter. But if it's denied, it's worse. Because sometimes it can happen that one, and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, to all illustrate all these things, even Krishna has spoken about this. In one instance, you will see when Krishna was talking about a great personality, very great personality in his own lunar dynasty, a king Pururavas. Pururavas story, when Krishna was talking about it, he says that his name is born from his mother's name was Ila. So he was known as Island because of his mother's name. That this king Pururavas, at one point, he got attracted to Urvashi. Urvashi has come from the, due to some unfortunate circumstances, Urvashi had to come to this world. And Urvashi was approached by Pururavas. Pururavas told Urvashi to become his wife. Urvashi agreed for some time, but on certain conditions. And when that conditions were broken, it comes later on in the Ekadasha Skandam, it is discussed in detail. When Urvashi decided to go back to the spiritual world, Pururavas was heartbroken. Because by engaging in that family relationship, in the family atmosphere, And in that relationship with Urvashi, Purvarava says one point that I have even forgotten when the sun was rising and when the sun was setting. That is the depth of ignorance I have fallen into, says Purvarava. And then at the end, when Urvashi eventually gave up Purvarava's association and went back to her own planet, Urvashi's planet. After all, she has come from the heavenly planet. She has gone back to her own planet. Purvarava's eventually come back here to this earthly planet. And there is a famous song in the Srimad Bhagavatam known as Ailagidam. Ailagidam is the song sung by Purvarava's after coming back, after enjoying the heavenly planets with Urvashi. And he says, sings that song here to the information of everybody else. And there he says, my dear children, he says, as because he is telling as a king, Purvarava is addressing his own subjects, he is telling them that please make your association the best. He says, it is due to association that I have fallen down. He says, in the association of Urvashi, I have forgotten. You can't blame Urvashi for that. Urvashi is not responsible for that. I have chosen that association. It's me who is responsible for this. So eventually Purvarava says to the people that I have forgotten in the association of Urvashi days and nights. When the sun was rising, when the sun was setting, I have forgotten that. And eventually he said only one instruction before he went back to the forest to perform penances. And that was this, that make your association the best in this world. Associate with people who are engaged in spiritual activities. Otherwise, you will fail and you will drop back into the material life. And this giving this instruction, Purvarava went back. Krishna quoted this while talking to Uddhava, and that is known as Ailagidam. So this attachment to the family life is not a new thing. It has been existing all the time, and it is the one of the bondages in this material world. Hard knot, very difficult to break away. And that is why in the Bhagavatam also, in Maharaj Rishabhadeva, while instructing to his children, 100 children, he says there about this, that this attachment is very difficult to break through. So, therefore, in Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavatam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, this was the problem with Saubhari. Saubhari could not come out of it. Similarly, in the next incident in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he is trying to point out another attachment, which is attachment to the children. So all this attachment is the problem where it starts from. That once this attachment builds up, then naturally it disturbs the one's desire for going back to spiritual world. To illustrate that fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they have presented a story which has taken from Mahabharata and so many other Puranas also, which is a very, very famous story of the Harishchandra. Harishchandra, his wife Chandramati and his son Rohita. So this Harishchandra was a great powerful king and who was born in the same dynasty, in the solar dynasty. He was born and there his difficulty was that he had no children. So the desire built up inside, he wanted to have children. Eventually seeing his pitiable condition, one day Sri Narada Muni came up to him and told him that by pleasing Varuna, the Lord who is in control of the water, the material element water, Varuna can help you and he will bless you with a child. So receiving these instructions from Narada Muni, Harishchandra performed a sacrifice to please Varuna. Varuna eventually agreed, but he made one commitment in there that if I have a son, I will offer him in sacrifice to you. That was the kind of offering he made to Varuna. Seeing Harishchandra's this desperate situation, Varuna decided to offer that benediction to him. So due to this benediction from Varuna, Harishchandra's wife became pregnant and they got a son named as Rohit. Now, as soon as the son was born, the attachment was built up there itself with Harishchandra and Rohita. Harishchandra didn't want to offer him anymore to Varuna because although that was the commitment in the beginning. So Harishchandra decided now that he will try to escape from this commitment by not doing what he has committed to Varuna. So initially in the Bhagavatam, in a few verses, Sri Shukan says this to Parikshit Maharaj, that in the beginning, when first time the child was born, Rohit was born, Varuna came, sent his representative to to offer him in sacrifice to him. Because that was the commitment. At that time, Harishchandra told him that the baby is just born. How can I offer him now? He hasn't even got his teeth. And unless he has his teeth, how could I make an offering from him? So the teeth was not born. So the representative went back. And when he went back, after some time, Varuna sent him again to get the child in offering. So this time, Harishchandra said, the teeth has grown, teeth has come out now. But at the same time, this is the first set of teeth. Now, first set of teeth don't last. After some time, it will drop off. Actually, he is not qualified to be for sacrifice unless he has the proper teeth, which is the second set of teeth should come up. So only then I can offer him in sacrifice. So the Varuna's representative went back and reported the same thing to Varuna again. Varuna realized what's happening. The attachment was getting stronger here. The commitment was changing. The words were changing. Everything was changing. So eventually, then second set of teeth has come and Varuna sent them back again to get him now. So he said, Harishchandra told him that he is only a young boy. He is only when he becomes a grown-up prince, I can offer him in sacrifice. You should not ask before that. So when all these things are getting a little dodgy or it's not getting very right, immediately Varuna decided, now you have this disease known as Mahodaram. Mahodaram is a kind of disease where the belly gets filled with water. So it is a disease related to the material element water. And due to offending Varuna, he got this disease Mahodaram. Mahodaram is also known as Jalodaram because of its water filling up in the belly. So Harishchandra was getting very sick with this illness due to upsetting Varuna. But at the same time, Rohit has grown up now. And Rohit sensed the situation, what was happening at home. That they were requesting that, Varuna was requesting that Rohit is offered as a sacrifice, as an animal like horse or anything. And Rohit decided to escape from the place. So he went to the forest, took his bow and arrow and escaped into the forest. He went away. Now, this whole story in the Mahabharata is running to many, many chapters in the Vanaparvam. In the middle of Mahabharata, it's a long, long story to explain this relationship between Harishchandra and Varuna and Rohit. So Rohit went away to the forest and for some time he stayed in the forest till he got a little bigger. And then one day he decided to come back and talk to Harishchandra about it. But Harishchandra was very upset when Rohit went away. But when Rohit was trying to return, Indra came and told Rohit, don't go back now. For some time you travel on pilgrimage and things, and I'll tell you what the appropriate time when you should go back to Harishchandra. The danger is still there. So Rohit went away he was traveling at different places. And eventually, it was so arranged that a Brahmana who had three children, he offered to make sacrifice of one of his children, the middle boy, he was willing to offer in sacrifice. So when he heard that, Rohit took him and went to Harishchandra, his father, and told him that I have brought this Brahmana boy, his name was Shunashepa. It is a famous story in the Puranas and Upanishads also. I brought Shunashepa, offer Shunashepa in sacrifice to Varuna, and I am released from these obligations. This was the word from Rohit to his father Harishchandra. So Harishchandra decided to make a sacrifice of this boy Shunashepa in place of his own son, because he was thinking, my son has been spared, but let me offer Shunashepa to the Brahmana who handed over his second son was a very, very poor person. And in desperation, he did this. And they decided to perform the sacrifice for that. And they had four sages to perform the sacrifices. Four great personalities. Who are they? Vishwamitran, Vasishtan, Jamadagni, and Ayasya. These are the four sages. Vishwamitra, Vasishta, Jamadagni, and Ayasya. These four sages were invited to perform the sacrifices. Now these four sages, they sit on the four different sides of the fire sacrifice. That is, they are known as, they have got special titles also. Hodhava, Udgadhava, Adhuryu, and Brahman. That is how they are designated. They all have their own respective duties in the sacrifice. So, when the sacrifice started, Shunasheva was tied, he was known as Savaniya Pashu. Savaniya Pashu means the animal who is going to be sacrificed. And Savaniya Pashu is tied to what is known as Yupam. These are the terminology used for Yupam means a kind of a post or a pillar to whom he is tied. So Savaniya Pashu is Shunasheban. Shunasheva and Shunasheva is tied to this Yupam or this post where he is going to be sacrificed to please Varuna to relieve the obligation from Harishchandra's side. So when the sacrifice started, all of them, these sages, they all have, you shouldn't take it that, oh, because somebody is getting killed, oh, it is amazing that they were doing such things. But actually, all these sages were such personalities, they could kill them, bring them back to life the next moment. This is the type of people they were. That these sages, Vishwamitra, Vasishta, Javanagni, Ayasya, they were all such personalities due to their tapashakti or the power of austerities. They have achieved that level of spiritual strength that for them to offer somebody in sacrifice is not a difficult thing at all. So anyway, Harishchandra's case, it was decided to offer and Shunasheva started crying knowing that he is going to be killed any moment. In today's world, if you say all these things, people will take it that you are some barbarians come from somewhere. That will be the first comment. Now, you could do such things to somebody, you could take away someone's life. But this will be the comment. Those who do not know the potency of the Vedic mantras and those who don't know the power of the sages will be guided in that way to think like that. But these personalities who are such powerful nature they had with their austerities and penances, the strength they acquired, they were capable of doing these things without any problem. So anyway, in our case, Shunasheban was crying, although he is a boy, little boy, started crying. And seeing this, Vishwamitra Maharshi felt a little bit compassion for him. So although he could do anything, Vishwamitra decided to save Shunasheva. So when Varuna came, Vishwamitra told Varuna that you give up this plan of taking Shunasheva from here. And the story of Shunasheva is very well known. In the Mahabharata, it goes into many, many chapters also. So Shunasheva was spared, and eventually Vishwamitra was actually testing Harishchandra's position. In fact, Harishchandra has got into all these problems, not because of his own problem, basically because between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, they were competing each other to test whether Harishchandra is reliable or a truthful person or not. So because of this, Vishwamitra was testing all the time Harishchandra's sincerity in what he has committed. And anyway, in another instance, Vishwamitra this time now spared Shunasheva and Rohit was also spared. As soon as this was over, Harishchandra was pleased with Vishwamitra. So Harishchandra decided to perform a sacrifice, a Rajasuya sacrifice, for which he requested Vishwamitra to help. Vishwamitra said, I'll perform the sacrifice, but you have to give me whatever dakshina. Afterwards, the sage is supposed to be paid a dakshina from by the ajamanan or the personality who performed the sacrifice. So Harishchandra agreed, whatever you ask, I'll offer that. So the Rajasuyam sacrifice was performed by Vishwamitra under his guidance, control. And when the sacrifice was over, Vishwamitra started requesting everything from Harishchandra, including his kingdom, his family, everything. Vishwamitra was in a dilemma what to do, but he couldn't break his word because he has given the commitment to Vishwamitra, knowing well that what Vishwamitra is capable of. So he offered all his kingdom to Vishwamitra, and eventually he had to hand over his family also. That means his wife Chandramati and son Rohit as well. So Chandramati and Rohit, they were taken away and they were given an engagement in another. Yamadharma Raja took another form. This was all Vishwamitra's way of alluring Harishchandra to test his strength of character or strength of commitment to honesty and truthfulness. And that Harishchandra had to leave everything and eventually he found shelter in one cemetery as a watchman, as was responsibility to manage the cemetery, which means he has to stay there whole day and people will bring dead bodies when they are burned. He has to provide all the assistance what's necessary for them and charge them for whatever it cost them. So this was his responsibility, managing the cemetery. This was Harishchandra's duty. So in that process, our Chandramati and her son Rohit, they had to take up the job in as a servant maid in a brahmana's house. So when they were engaged in that service, one evening, that Chandravati sent Rohit to get the chamata grass for performing. Brahmanas have a lot of duties with this darbha grass and all, usha grass they use for their sacrifices. So for the brahmana's sake, Rohit was sent, and when Rohit went there, unfortunately, that evening, he was bitten by a snake and he died. So the dead body of Rohit was brought back, and Chandramati took the dead body to bury, and he took it to the same cemetery where Harishchandra was standing there as the gatekeeper. So when they got there, Harishchandra could not recognize first Chandramati or the dead body because of Vishwamitra's creating these illusions. And eventually, Harishchandra recognized the Mangala Sutram or the thread what they have tied at the neck while the time of marriage. And from there he was able to realize that this is nobody else than his own wife who has come. By now years have passed and they have totally lost contact. And late in the evening, sometime like in the twilight, the dead body was brought in. And Harishchandra was asked to Chandramati was refusing to pay any money. She didn't have anything to pay. And when Rohit's body was going to be burned, at that time Vishwamitra appeared on the scene and took them away from there again. So like this, Harishchandra's story in the Srimad Bhagavatam is to indicate this attachment in the family life, what happens to for householder situation with the children. So putra dara griha adishum, putram and daram, then children and wife. So two things, attachment for the householder. So these two things are spoken through these two stories. True Saubhari Maharshi story, attachment to the wife, and through the story of Harishchandra, how the attachment with his own son was that desire to have that. It is not the attachment, more than that, the desire, possessing that desire to have that life with as a father, as a son, that relationship. And this was also so strong in their minds. Now, when we say all these things, we start wondering, why all these things so complicated, isn't it? It's natural that in this modern world we live. But to tell you the truth, that if you start thinking about that life and today's life, you will come to think, realize at some point that perhaps that life was better. There is a reason for saying that. In the Kali Yuga, the way of life is such that attachment to putram, daram and graham is considered to be a natural thing. It is not an unnatural thing. It's a natural thing in this world. It happens in life. One who is living peacefully in this world, in a family situation, this attachment is bound to develop. That you cannot eliminate that. Because that is how a peaceful human society lives. But if you compare that into the modern society, what we live today, even we are far from that. You can see that. In the name, family life has become really a burden in the Kali Yuga, because the responsibility that goes along with it and the strong desire for sense gratification. Rather than bringing up a family, the desire for sense gratification has become the priority in many of the so-called society, modern society. It's everybody knows about it. It doesn't have to be explained. And that is the modern way of thinking. Modern way of life is such that today married life means the priority is how to engage in sense gratification. And that is precisely the thing what Vedic culture has totally condemned. And in other words, if one follows that path of destruction, that is the sense gratification process, he is not even considered to be in grihastha ashram. In other words, that once we pull out from this basic fundamental principles of human life, what to talk about attachment, even the very basics of human life, if that is forgotten, what possibility is there of developing spiritual life? This is what we have to remember. That the very principle of Krishna consciousness is to come out from already the so-called attachment. But even we are not getting to that stage of attachment. Rather, we have a lifestyle where we have totally released ourselves from the basic principles of the Krishna consciousness of Grihastha Ashram. Rather, it is a situation where even the very, very principles are forgotten. In addition to that, you can see this also in the householder ashram. Although it is attachment, although it is this putradhara grihadishu and all, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, in spite of that, there is one thing that Krishna says, within that framework, it is possible to develop Krishna consciousness. In other words, what Krishna is saying is that if you go follow this process of Varnashrama Dharma, as in the householder life, if you are living a life like that, there is a possibility, even if it is attachment building up, there is a possibility of developing Krishna consciousness. But you can imagine from now, from these words, that if one is not following even those principles and Krishna consciousness, where is the possibility of developing any understanding of spiritual life? That is what is the problem. That when human society slips away, rejecting the Vedic injunctions, rejecting the Vedic literature, and start thinking that sense gratification is the priority in everything, that simply sense gratifying the senses alone is the goal of life, that means the possibility of developing Krishna consciousness is very, very minimum. That is becomes very, very difficult. Secondly, what brings sense gratification the problem? Problem with sense gratification is this, that when the senses are uncontrolled and the mind is uncontrolled and the desire for sense gratification is whipped up all the time, the mind gets disturbed. And the disturbed mind results in ultimately only one thing, that it has to immediately come out in the form of some action. What you find in the modern world today, which the world thinks as highly significant, all these things, travel industry, hotel industry, everything, if you think about it, in other words, it is nothing but a manifestation of the rajogunam or mood of passion in the human consciousness. It's nothing different than that. But on the other hand, an illusion, we think that we are so advanced now, we have got fantastic hotels everywhere, fantastic traveling facilities all over the world, and why are we, people are saying we are not advanced? This is what our question is. And for us, we find it so difficult to understand when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam that this attachment to putra, dhara, griha, adishu is the problem. We have no attachment, no putram, no dharam, no griham, wandering around whole world in the name of running business and industry. And this is the modern society. And we think that we are advancing. So you can see that our own activities, which are leaving aside the principles of Krishna consciousness, if we try to act in this modern world, the result will be that we will go far away from spiritual path. Spiritual life will be difficult more and more by our present. That is why, in spite of all this, all this talk about Krishna consciousness, still it's not going into the head. Why? Because mind is so disturbed, by affected by this modern way of life. It is taking away the valuable time of understanding the higher principles, which is based on the mode of goodness. So Satugunam brings all this attachment though. Although the attachment is there, but in Satugunam, knowledge can develop. In Rajogunam and Tamogunam, there is no possibility, because it is disturbed and it is ignorance. So that is why the difference is the three modes of nature, how it controls us. In Satugunam we understand, we can understand. Although material attachment may be there, but we can understand that Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrata Gudhoyam Mudhoyam Abhijanadi Logamamajamavyayam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also that Prakasham, the light will come only when one is in the mode of goodness. So to illustrate, that is why I am saying that these kings, these Harishchandra and others, they were already going through this difficulty, even following the principles. So what possibility we have when we don't even follow the injunction seriously? So this is where it comes from. So Harishchandra's case, this is what has happened. And then Harishchandra decided that dynasty goes on like that. And in that series, there was another powerful king who appeared in the known as Sagara. King Sagara, and it is from him that the word Sagar has come, or he was created the oceans, and therefore his name is, he was known as Sagara, very powerful king. And the Sagara Maharshi, when he was, the king Sagara, when he was born, at the time he was poisoned. He had his wife later when he married, but prior to that, the time of birth, there was a priest known as Aurvan. This is all in the Mahabharata. This story is this here. Srimad Bhagavatam has taken a lot of things from Mahabharata. Everything is mentioned in the Mahabharata in detail. So Aurvan was there, and Aurvan was the priest of Sagara Maharshi. So at the time of birth, Aurvan told Sagara's mother that he is poisoned at the time of death. But somehow or the other, due to the priest's efficiency or protective nature, Sagara was taken care of. And when he was born, he became also very, very powerful. And this Sagara, history is recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because he has a lot of things to say. The Sagara, Sagara became such a powerful king that that he has decided in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find that he was responsible for the oceans, and therefore he was known as Sagara. Now before we continue, I just want to read one chapter, and before we talk about that, we have to say a few things from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Reading through Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Sanatana Goswami various things. You may have seen sometimes a book known as Brihad Bhagavadamrita. They have started publishing now. Two volumes have already come out. Now, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, when they were in serving the Chand Khasti at that time, Nawab Hussain Shah at that time, they were very fond of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And from Srimad Bhagavatam, you can see when you read about their life that Rupa Goswami had a very deep realization from that, and encouraged him to come to take the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to expand Srimad Bhagavatam to this world through the writings of Sanatana Goswami. And that is why there is a long instruction to Sanatana Goswami about Srimad Bhagavatam from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this instruction to explain the philosophical significance and also the value of Srimad Bhagavatam to Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and explained that in detail to him. The reason for doing that was that he wanted to show to Sanatana Goswami that even if you study whole lifetime Srimad Bhagavatam with all your so-called brain, you are not going to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. That is what the message was. But the way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented that to Sanatana Goswami is such, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked up this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and told Sanatana Goswami that although I have not studied much, that Mahaprabhu always spoke in that way, that I have not studied much, from this verse I can see, he said to Sanatana Goswami, that what Srimad Bhagavatam is. And there is a very lengthy discussion, something like 250 pages in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, discussions between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami on this verse. It's known as the Atmarama verses. The verse is, Atmaramascha Munayo Nargandam Abhirukrameim Kurvandi Haitugim Bhaktim Itam Budaguno Hari. The simple words, very simple if you read that, Almaramas Chamunayam, that those who are Almaramas. Almaramas means those who are situated in one's own self, who are totally in identification with the spirit soul. And the Munayo. Munayo means Munis or the great sages. Nargranda Abhirukrameim, that who have broken their the granthi. Granthi means the knot of attachment. In other words, one who are fully detached from the material world. Kurvandi ahaitugim bhaktim itam bodaguno hari. That such personalities who have come to that level of realization, they will glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His transcendental qualities. That's all the verse means.
ആത്മാരാമശ്ചമുനയോ നിർഗ്രന്ഥ അഭിരുക്രമേ കുർവന്തി അഹൈതുകിം ഭക്തിം ഇത്തം ഭൂതഗുണോ ഹരീം.
And the verse is very nice. In the present tense, Shishukan is saying this to Parikshit Maharaj. It's a simple verse. If you read, there's a translation. It is there in the Bhagavatam. You can read. And Srila Prabhupada's purport also is there. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought, let me make Sanatana Goswami understand a little bit more what Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. To just to explain that, Mahaprabhu took 250 pages and through 61 different meanings he explained this verse to Sanatana Goswami. It is there in detail in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so this verse has become very popular, Atmarama verse. This is only one verse Mahaprabhu has picked up. Now you can imagine, if all the 18,000 verses, if Mahaprabhu started explaining like this, probably Sanatana Goswami wouldn't have got any time further to think anymore. To such an extent he could have kept busy. But that was enough. With one verse, the message was through to Sanatana Goswami, got the message from Mahaprabhu.
ആത്മാരാമശ്ച മുനയോ നിർഗ്രന്ഥ അഭിരുക്രമേ കുർവന്തി അഹൈതുകിം ഭക്തിം ഇത്തം ഭൂതഗുണോ ഹരീം.
That Krishna's qualities and transcendental pastimes and attributes are such that ഭൂതഗുണോ ഹരി, that Hari's qualities are such, everybody is pulled towards that. And there is a long discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about it. So after all this discussion was over, Mahaprabhu asked Sanatana Goswami, what have you now understood from this? He said. So Sanatana Goswami didn't have anything further he could say. He didn't know what to say because he was amazed by that explanations, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to that verse. And the way he explained that really touched his heart to such an extent that Sanatana Goswami said, you are Krishna. Nobody else can do this, what you have done to this verse. Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami, don't say like that. I am not Krishna, he said. But Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. This is how he answered that. He didn't say. He said, I am not Krishna. But Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. This is how he began that discussion. And then, so, before we go further, I'll just read that few verses, what Sanatana Goswami, how he told that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed that with Rupa Goswami. And you will see there in that conversation that Chaitanya Charitamrita. Madhyalila, chapter 24. You can, when you go home, you can take the book and have a look at it. See these verses. What he says here. That I have thus explained 60 different meanings and all of them aim at the service of Lord Krishna. After giving so many examples, that's the only meaning, he said. Then he says,
Aham vedmishuko veti vyaso veti na vetiva Bhaktya Bhagavadam Grahim Nabodhya Najati Gayam.
So, Aham Veti Shuko Veti. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted Lord Shiva at that point. He says, Lord Shiva says like this. What does Lord Shiva say?
Aham Veti Shuko Veti.
I understand Srimad Bhagavadam, he said. And who else understands Srimad Bhagavadam? Sukadeva Goswami understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Shiva says he understands Srimad Bhagavatam. Then in the next line, there is a little difficult statement to understand. Why?
Aham veti shuko veti vyaso veti na vetiva.
Probably Vyasadeva understands Bhagavatam. He's not confirming that. Person who has written Srimad Bhagavatam and he has taught Srimad Bhagavatam to Sukadeva Goswami. And Lord Shiva is saying, it's a little doubt whether Vyasadeva has understood Srimad Bhagavatam. It looks a little strange, that statement, isn't it? But you can see from that statement, what does that mean? Why does he say like that?
Aham veti shuko veti vyaso veti na veti va bhaktya bhagavadam grahyam na bhudya cha na tikaya.
Bhagavadam is not understood, Lord Shiva says in this verse. Bhagavadam is not understood
Bhaktiya Bhagavadam Yayam. Only by devotion you can understand Srimad Bhagavadam. So, na buddhya na chatikaya, not by buddhi, not by intelligence you will understand Srimad Bhagavatam, nor by tikaya, by the commentaries of the other personalities you can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying all these things? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew very well that as the advancement in the age of Kali happens, more and more people will give more importance to the intelligence. Intelligence will become everything. In other words, those who are intelligent will think, oh, I have understood Srimad Bhagavatam. What's there to understand anymore? Anything, everything I have studied, I have understood. But here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying openly, Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Yayam. Only by devotion you will understand Srimad Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Grahyam. That's what he was. Grahyam. He means he will, Grahanam. Grahanam means he will absorb that understanding, correct understanding. Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Grahyam. Na buddhya, na jatikaya, not by intelligence, not by any commentaries or any other document. So, in other words, Vedavyasa Maharshi did not understand Srimad Bhagavatam according to Lord Shiva. May have understood, he says, that aham vetmi shuko vetmi vyaso vetina vetiva. He may or may not have understood. The reason for saying that is that Srimad Bhagavatam, when Sukadeva Goswami heard first time, he understood so well that he was able to present it to Parikshit in a much better way than the way Vedavyasa has taught Sukadeva Goswami. That was the capacity. Why? Because he was the most qualified person to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. That renunciation, that knowledge and detachment, what Sukadeva Goswami had, Vedavyasa didn't have. That is why in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Sukadeva Goswami was born, he walked away from home, isn't it? That's a well-known story. That Putra Putra, he was calling him back, who? Vedavyas. Because of the same problem, Putra Dara Griha Adishu, Vedavyas still had some attachment. Whereas, when Sukadeva Goswami walked out, Putra Putra, he was calling, Putra Edidan Maidaya Taravo Vinedu, Tam Sarvabhuta Hridayam Munim Anadosmi. What was happening? Sukadeva Goswami didn't answer. Who answered? All the trees, plants, creepers, everything, everything. They were answering that question. Why? Because by his realization, he was so realized that he was already present in all other living entities as the same spirit soul. So you can see from this, the level of realization that one has will help to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, not by intelligence. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to stress this point very clearly to Sanatana Goswami. Otherwise, there was no need to mention this verse in this point, at this point in time in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But while explaining the Atmarama verse, when he came up to this point, he started saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started bringing out Srimad Bhagavatam so strongly to Sanatana Goswami, which inspired him in due course to explain Srimad Bhagavatam through Brihad Bhagavatamritam. So you will see here, aham veti, Lord Shiva said, I may know, he says. Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, may know. And Vyasadeva may know or may not know the Srimad Bhagavatam. On the whole, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless Puranam, can be learned only through devotional service, not by material intelligence, speculative methods, or imaginary commentaries. None of them will help. And then he says, after hearing all the explanations of all the different meanings of the Atmarama word, Sanatana Goswami was struck with wonder. He fell down at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began to offer prayers. Sanatana Goswami said, my dear Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda. All the Vedic literatures are vibrated through your breathing. Now, when Sanatana Goswami said this, there is also something more. Because when he said to Mahaprabhu, it was through your breathing, all the Vedic literatures are vibrated through your breathing. That is a fact. Because when all the Vedic literature are considered to be Krishna's breathing, that is the relationship between Vedic literature and Krishna. So because of that, Sanatana Goswami spoke very openly that it is your breathing. But, my dear Lord, you are the original speaker of the Bhagavatam. You therefore know its real import. But for you, no one can understand the confidential meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is what Sanatana Goswami told to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reply? He said, why are you glorifying me personally? You should understand the transcendental position of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why don't you consider this important point? Mahaprabhu saying this to Sanatana Goswami. Then in the next verse, Krishna Tulya Bhagavatam Vibhu Sarvashraya Prati Shloke Prati Akshare Nana Arthakaya. Srimad Bhagavatam is as great as Krishna, the Supreme Lord and shelter of everything. In each and every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam and in each and every syllable, there are various meanings. This is why this was compiled by the great personality Sukadeva Goswami. You remember, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami told Krishna, come and decorate my words. Say, Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. In the Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami didn't pray to the goddess Saraswati. Normally, if you want the power of speech, whom do you pray to? You have to pray to Saraswati. She is in charge of the power of speech. Vagdevada. She is referred to in the Shastra as Vagdevada. But did Sukadeva Goswami pray to Saraswati? He didn't pray to Saraswati. What did he pray? Whom did he pray to? He prayed to Krishna. Why? That ability for Saraswati Devi to give the benediction to anyone to speak nicely has come from Krishna. So why should I pray to anybody else? That is what Sukadeva Goswami's approach was. He said, Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. Come and decorate my words. And from then on, it was a flow of words that come through Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why each and every word Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says here is difficult to understand. It has so many meanings. Each and every syllable, there are various meanings. This form of Srimad Bhagavatam is given in questions and answers. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, thus the conclusion is established. By hearing these questions and answers, one is highly astonished, he says. Now that Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Master of all mystic powers, has departed from his abode. So, at that point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to take one question to Sanatana Goswami and to ask him that what is his understanding about it. What was that question? The question and answer, both are in the Bhagavatam. So Mahaprabhu picked up those two verses and spoke to Sanatana Goswami. It's one of the finest discussions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita between Sanatana Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted Sanatana Goswami to realize that these two verses, what he quoted in the first canto, a question as well as the answer. The question is, Bruhi Yogeshware Krishne Brahmanye Dharma Varmani Swam Kashtamathano Pede Dharmakam Sharanam Gadaha. Bruhi Yogeshware Krishne. Krishna has gone back to the spiritual world. After his 125 years of pastimes in this world, Krishna departed to the spiritual world. Bruhi Yogeshware Krishne Brahmanye Dharma Varmani. That two things, Brahminical qualities and religious principles, they were dependent and protected by Krishna all the time. So when Krishna has gone back, Swam Kashtamathano Pedem Dharmakam Sharanam Gadaha. That when Krishna has gone back, Kam Swashtam No Pedem Dharmakam Sharanam Gadaha. Where did Dharma take shelter? This was the question in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This comes in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam itself, where when the sages who were assembled there, when Shaunagarshi and Sudha Goswami, they were discussing, the sages in Naimisharanyam raised this question to Sudha Goswami. That is where this question comes in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto. Dharmakam Sharanam Gadaha. Where did religious principles take shelter when Krishna went back to the spiritual world? That was the question in this verse raised in the first canto. So Sanatana Goswami said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, look at this verse. What does it say? It says here, Bruhi Yogeshware Krishne Brahmanye Dharma Varmani Swam Kashtam Adhanopede Dharmakam Sharanam Gadaha. Where did Dharma take shelter? Because Krishna, who protects the Brahminical principles, religious principles and dharma, both of them, who pretends Krishna has gone back to the spiritual world, and what has happened to religious principle, dharmam, what has happened to the dharmakam sharanam gadaham. Now that Shri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us by whom religious principles are presently protected. That's the translation. In answer to that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the answer also, picking up from Shrimad Bhagavatam. The answer is also there in the Bhagavatam. It says, Krishna Swadhamo Bhagate Dharma Jnana Adibisaham Kalau Nashtadrisha Amesha Puranarkotyudhano Puranarkodhano Didaha. That Krishna Swadhamo Bhagate Dharma Jnana Adibisaham. When Krishna went back to the spiritual world, along with him, dharmam, or religious principles, and jnanam, knowledge also went back with him. Krishna swadhamo bhagade dharma jnana adibhisaka kalau nashtadrisha amesham puranarkadhuno didaha. That what did happen then? Then Uddhava asked Krishna, what's going to happen now? He said, at that point Krishna said, kalau nashtadrisha amesham. For those people who have lost their vision in the age of Kali. In fact, who has not lost the vision in the age of Kali? Is there anybody who has not lost the vision? Because we have lost our vision in life, that is why we have to struggle in this material world to such an extent that the goal of life, which is supposed to be, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, is going back to Krishna. Nothing else. That is the main business to be. But kalau nashtadrisha amesham, nashtadrisham, they have lost their vision in this world. For their benefit, Krishna said that I will enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the statement from Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying this to Sanatana Goswami. So you can see from the Chaitanya Vajradamadam that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified Srimad Bhagavatam and what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought as necessary to understand, and not to understand Bhagavatam in the way through our material intelligence. One will never understand Srimad Bhagavatam in that way. That is why he quoted Lord Shiva saying there, Mahaprabhu is quoting Lord Shiva, and say, Bhaktya Bhagavatam Grahyam Na Buddhya Na Chatikaya. Not by, you will not understand Srimad Bhagavatam by Buddhi or by any other commentaries on that. Imaginary commentaries, whatever that is mentioned there. So from this you can see that how much Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave importance to Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam on the basis on which Sanatana Goswami further wrote so many literature to present the principles and mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So coming back to Srimad Bhagavatam, we were discussing the next part of the story of Saubhari Maharshi. But before we do that, I just have to read one chapter at least, because we have so many chapters behind. So we'll just read this slowly, one chapter, which is the fifth chapter of the ninth canto, which is the one where we have not read this. It is the last chapter relating to Ambarish Maharaj's story. And then we will continue again. Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Bhagavadadishto Durvasas Chakrata Apidam Ambarishamupavritya talpada udukido grahil. Tasya sodhyamanam viksha padasparsha vilajjidaha astavil tadhare rastram kribaya pidido brisham. Ambarishavaja tomagnir bhagavan suryas tom somo jodisham padi tomabastam shidirvyama vayur matra indriyanicham. Sudarshana namastubhyam sahasra rachuda priyam sarvastagadin vipraya swasti bhuyam idaspadim. Tum dharma swamadam satyam, tum yajnyo khila yajnyavuk, tum lokavala sarvalma, tum teja pavrusham varam. Namasuna bhagira dharma sedave, adharma shila surya dhuma kedave, trailokya gopaya vishuddha varchase, manojavaya albhuta karmane grine. To tejasa dharma mayena samhradam tam aprakashaschadrado mahalpanam, durate aste mahima giram pade, to drupamedal sadasal paravaram. Yadavisrishtastomananjanena vai balambravishto jidadaityadanavam bahudanurvam shirodharani virknan najastram pradhane virajase sattvam jagaltranakhala prahanaye nirubida sarvasaho gadabrada viprasya jasmal kuladaiva hedave
ವಿಧೇಹಿ ಭದ್ರಂ ತದನುಗ್ರಹೋ ಹಿ ನಾಂ ಯದ್ಯಸ್ತಿ ದತ್ತಮಿಷ್ಟಂ ವಾ ಸ್ವಧರ್ಮೋ ವಾ ಸುನಿಷ್ಠಿತ ಕುಲಂ ನೋ ವಿಪ್ರದೈವಂ ಜೇ ದ್ವಿಜೋಭವದು ದ್ವಿಜ್ವರಾಃ ಯದಿ ನೋ ಭಗವಾನ್ ಪ್ರೀತಮೇಕ ಸರ್ವಗುಣಾಶ್ರಯ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಾತ್ಮಭಾವೇನ ದ್ವಿಜೋಭವದು ವಿಜ್ವರ ಶ್ರೀಶುಗ ಉವಾಚ ಇದು ಸಂಸ್ತುವದೋ ರಾಜ್ಞೋ ವಿಷ್ಣುಚಕ್ರಂ ಸುದರ್ಶನ ಅಗಾಮ್ಯಲ್ ಸರ್ವದೋ ವಿಪ್ರಂ ಪ್ರದಹದ್ರಾಜಯಾಜ್ಞೆಯ ಸಮುಕ್ತೋಸ್ತ್ರಾಗ್ನಿರಾವೇನ ದುರ್ವಾಸ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿ ಮಾಂಸ್ತದಾ ಪ್ರಶಶಂಸ ತಮೋರುವೇಷಂ ಯುಂಜಾನ ಪರಮಾಶಿಷ ಶ್ರೀ ದುರ್ವಾಸ ಉವಾಚ ಅಹೋಮನಂದ ದಾಸಾನಾಂ ಮಹತ್ವಂ ದೃಷ್ಟಮದ್ಯ ಮೇ ಕೃದಾಗಸೋಭಿ ಯದ್ರಾಜನ್ ಮಂಗಳಾನಿ ಸಮೀಹಸೆ ದುಷ್ಕರಕೋನು ಸಾಧೂನಾಂ ದುಸ್ತ್ಯಜೋ ವಾ ಮಹಾತ್ಮನಾಂ ಯೈ ಸಂಗೃಹೀತೋ ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸಾತ್ವದಾಂ ಹೃಷಭೋ ಹರಿ ಯನ್ನಾಮ ಶ್ರುತಿ ಮಾತ್ರೇಣ ಪುಮಾನ್ ಭವತಿ ನಿರ್ಮಲ ತಸ್ಯ ತೀರ್ಥಪದ ಕಿಂ ವಾ ದಾಸಾನಾಮವಶಿಷ್ಯತೆ ರಾಜನ್ನನುಗೃಹೀತೋಹಂ ತ್ವಯಾದಿ ಕರುಣಾತ್ಮನ ಮದಕಂ ವೃಷದ ಕೃತ್ವಾ ಪ್ರಣಾಯನ್ ಅಭಿರಕ್ಷಿತಾಂ ರಾಜಾತಮಕೃತಾಹಾರಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಾಗಮನ ಕಾಂಕ್ಷಯ ಚರಣಾ ಉಪಸಂಗೃಹ್ಯ ಪ್ರಸಾದ್ಯ ಸಮಭೋಜಯಲ್ ಶೋಷಿತ್ವಾದಿತ್ಯಂ ಸಾರ್ವಗೌಮಿಗಾಮಿಗಂ ತೃಪ್ತಾತ್ಮಾ ನೃಪತಿಂ ಪ್ರಹ ಪೂಜ್ಯದಾಮಿತಿ ಸಾದರಂ ಪ್ರೀತೋಸ್ಮಿ ಅನುಗೃಹೀತೋಸ್ಮಿ ತವ ಭಾಗವತಸ್ಯ ವೈ ದರ್ಶನ ಸ್ಪರ್ಶನಾಲಾಭೈ ಆದಿತ್ಯೇನ ಅಲ್ಪಮೇಧಸಾ ಕರ್ಮ ಅವದಾದಮೇದಲ್ತೆ ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಸ್ವಸ್ತ್ರಿಯೋ ಮುಹು ಕೀರ್ತಿಂ ಪರಮಪುಣ್ಯಾಂ ಚ ಕೀರ್ತಯಿಷ್ಯಂತಿ ಕೀರ್ತಯಿಷ್ಯತಿ ಭೂಯಂ ಶ್ರೀಶುಕ ಉವಾಚ ಏವಂ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತ್ಯ ರಾಜಾನಾಂ ದುರ್ವಾಸ ಪರಿತೋಷಿತಾಃ ಯಯೋ ವಿಹಾಯ ಸಾಮಂತ್ರೆ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಲೋಕಮಹೈದುಗಂ ಸಂವತ್ಸರೋತ್ಯಗಾಲ್ ತಾವದ್ ದ್ಯಾವದಾನಾಗದೋ ಗದ ಮುನಿಸ್ತದ್ದರ್ಶನಾಕಾಂಕ್ಷಿ ರಾಜಾ ಭಕ್ಷೋ ಬಭೂವ ಗದೇ ಚ ದುರ್ವಾಸಸಿ ಸೋಂಬರೀಷೋ ದ್ವಿಜೋಪಯೋಗಾದಿಮವಿತ್ರಮಾಹರಲ್ ಕೃಷೇರ್ವಿಮೋಕ್ಷಂ ವ್ಯಸನಂ ಚ ಬುದ್ಧ್ವಾ ಮೇನೇ ಸ್ವವೀರ್ಯಂ ಚ ಪರಾನುಭಾವಂ ಏವಂ ವಿಧಾನೇಕ ಗುಣಸ್ಸ ರಾಜಾ ಪರಾತ್ಮನಿ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಣಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಿ ಕ್ರಿಯಾಕಲಾಪೈ ಸಮವಾಹ ಭಕ್ತಿಂ ಯಯಾ ವಿರಿಂಚನ್ನರಯಾಂಶ್ಚಕಾರ ಅಧಾಂಬರೀಷಸ್ತನಯೇಷು ರಾಜ್ಯಂ ಸಮಾನಶೀಲೇಷು ವಿಸೃಜ್ಯ ಧೀರಾಃ ವನಂ ವಿವೇಶಾತ್ಮನಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಿ ಮನೋ ದದ್ವಸ್ತಗುಣ ಪ್ರವಾಹ ಇತ್ಯೇದಲ್ ಪುಣ್ಯವಾಖ್ಯಾನಮಂಬರೀಷಸ್ಯ ಭೂಪದೇ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನನ್ಮನುಧ್ಯಾಯನ್ ಭಕ್ತೋ ಭಗವದೋ ಭವೇಲ್ ಇದು ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಪುರಾಣೇ ಪಾರಮಹಂಸ್ಯಾಂ ಸಂಹಿತಾಯಾಂ ನವಮ ಸ್ಕಂದೇ ಅಂಬರೀಷಚರಿತಂ ನಾಮ ಪಂಚಮೋಧ್ಯಾಯ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ So, in that particular verse, the last 27th verse, ityedal punyamakhyanamambari shasya bhupade sankirtanayanadhyayan bhakto bhagavado bhavel. Shri Shukana said something very important there, that this Ambarisha Maharaj story, when one reads that, and when one understands and relishes that, automatically he has given a benediction that it will develop a devotion in the heart of a devotee. So this is a special benediction from Sukadeva Goswami. That Srimad Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see certain times comments from Sukadeva Goswami like this. That this Ambarish Maharaj story has got that potency. When one reads that story, studies that, and understand that, and relish it, automatically that should generate some devotion in the heart of the devotee. So then in the next chapter, is the Ambarisha story is over. Then the Ikshvaku story is mentioned. And then after that, Mandhada story is in the seventh chapter. And then after that, we have to read all that. And then the Rohita story, Sagaran's story is mentioned there. So I'll continue talking for a few minutes, then we'll read these chapters later. So we are talking about Sagara, King Sagara story. Now, this Sagara, what did he do? What was so significant about Sagara? Sagara decided to perform an Ashwamedha sacrifice. So, performing Ashwamedha sacrifice, he had this horse he let loose. So, Indra got upset as usual. As soon as there is an Ashwamedha sacrifice, Indra gets concerned. So, Indra came down, stole the horse, which he did, same thing as he did previously he did the same thing with Prithu Maharaj case also, isn't it? Then Prithu Maharaj wanted to perform Ashwamedham, the horses were stolen by Indra. So exactly same thing he did also here. He stole the horse and took it away. And the horse was taken away. And what did he do? This time Indra didn't take it away with him. Rather he thought, I'll take the horse
and tie it nearby, some great personality. So when they come looking for the horse, if they find it, eventually they'll think that the sage has stolen it. And this is Indra's ways of doing different things. So what did he do? Indra took the horse away and took it to such a place where Kapila Maharshi, whom we found in the third canto, we are discussing Kapila Muni's, who instructed Devahuti Devi. Kapila Muni was performing penances, took this horse there and tied there near Kapila Muni's ashram. Tied, and Indra left the place. And Indra thought he has done his job very nicely and he escaped from there. So Sagara Maharshi, now Sagara's story is also interesting. I mentioned to you that Sagara had two wives. One was known as Keshini and the other one was Sukanya. There were two wives. From Sukanya, he had 60,000 children in that. You can imagine that today we have one child, we consider it as a liability, so much burden, how to bring up the child. All stress develops from the day the child is born. The father is struggling, mother is struggling, everybody is suffering. So much struggle. That is the difference in the Kali Yuga and their timings. And in their times, 60,000 children were born for King Sagara, from this wife, Sukanya. And from Keshini, one child was born. And so the 60,000 of them, because there were so many numbers, King Sagara told them, go and find that horse, wherever it is, he said. They started going all around the world. And it was then that eventually they found this horse, these 60,000 of them, traveling all over the world. They find out that the horse was being tied by near to Kapila Maharshi, and Kapila Maharshi was sitting in a transcendental mood, in meditation there, and fully in closed eyes, not knowing what was going on there. So what Indra did was, when Indra left after tying the horse near Kapila Maharshi while leaving, he created an armor around him so that nobody could approach Kapila Maharshi straight away. Knowing very well, Sagara's children, the 60,000 of them, they started firing arrows and it started disturbing Kapila Maharshi, but nothing was happening to him. Kapila Maharshi woke up from his meditations, and when he woke up from the meditation, he saw the 60,000 of them trying to attack him. And no, because he didn't get angry with them, but because he was disturbed, that was enough, that offense was enough, that from the eye, from the Netra Agni, it is referred to, the fire came out, and in that fire, all 60,000 of them burnt into ashes. That is what we're talking about. Now, many scholars, who have thoroughly analyzed this history, or in an historical way, their conclusion is that this Kavilaranyam is the modern, what they call as this California, and also the Horse Island, Ash Island, all these places what this incident has happened. But Bhagavatam doesn't say California or anything like that. Bhagavatam only says that Kapila Maharshi was in meditation and Kavilaranyam was the place and these incidents happened there. So that is not so important, because the intention is not to expand the geographical knowledge. What's important is what has happened to them. Then when this happened, all the 60,000 of them were burned. King Sagara didn't know what to do now. So he asked his other son, whose name was Asamanjasa. Asamanjasa was the one son born from his wife Keshini. So Asamanjasa was requested by Sagara to go and approach Kapila Maharshi properly. But Asamanjasa was by nature a little bit realized soul. He was not interested in all these things. Now, we were talking about Saubhari Maharshi. What were we saying there? We said that his attachments to having a family life, that is what led him into problems, isn't it? Saubhari Maharshi eventually had to marry the 50 daughters of Manthadav and household life and all that, wasted a lot of time like that. Harishchandra's story, what did it say? It taught us one thing, that attachment of having children and that attachment also, what it can cause in life. So to illustrate that fact, the story of Harishchandra was illustrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now what is left is the attachment to wealth. So our Sagara's attachment was for wealth. Putradhara Grihadishu that graham, all wealth, whatever that is referred to, land, all these things falls in the same category. That he was attached to wealth, and Sagara was performing Ashwamedha for that purpose. That was the goal of that. Now, look at Sagara's situation now. 60,000 of his children were burned into ashes in that process. He lost all his 60,000 of them. And the next thing what happened was, Asamanjasa had no problems like this. Lord the father had. Sagara had attachment to wealth, but Asamanjasa was a little bit more sensible. In other words, he was a little bit more careful about these things. So he didn't show any interest in all these things, in the sacrifice and in this acquiring wealth or Ashwamedham or any such thing was of no interest to him. So in order to come out of this attachment from this society, he started acting in a very strange way. In other words, you will see sometimes, if you read Asamanjasa's story in the Mahabharata also, you will find he was started acting in a way that he was a very cruel person. It will appear like that. So one day, what he did, that in Sarayu River, the Sarayu River is a famous river. In the Sarayu River, when Asamanjasa was walking along the river, there was a lot of children who were playing there on the river bank. He pulled every one of them and drowned them in the water and killed them. All of them, all the children. So when his activity started like this, Sagara got very upset and expelled him from the kingdom. That's what he wanted actually. Asamanjasa wanted to be thrown away so that Sagara won't chase him to get anything done. But as soon as he was expelled, he pulled out those children from the water and brought them back to life again and sent them back home. This is Asamanjasa's story. So Asamanjasa, as soon as he was expelled, he left and he went away. And Sagara also discarded him. But Asamanjasa had a son by name Amshuman. So this Amshuman took over now. Amshuman wanted to please Sagara, so he decided to go and see Kapila Muni and request him and please him and get that horse back from there. So he went up to Kapila, and in the Bhagavatam that is explained in detail what Amshuman did. When Amshuman went to see Kapila Muni, Amshuman started glorifying Kapila Muni as the personality of Godhead, what he has done to this world by delivering the knowledge of Sankhya Yoga. All those things he explains there and glorified Kapila Muni very nicely. So when he pleased Kapila Muni, Kapila Muni was naturally very pleased with Amshuman's behavior, and he called Amshuman and handed over the horse and told him that you can take this horse and complete that sacrifice which Sagara has started before, which was not completed and it was left half done. So the horse was brought back and the sacrifice was completed. But Amshuman had a desire to get all the 60,000 people back to life again. So, or at least to get them, give them some good direction. After all, they were dead. They died in a wrong way, in the fire of this the anger from not anger from the Kapila Muni's offending Kapila Muni. So they knew the souls of the 60,000 children of Sagara hasn't got any proper direction. It was wandering around without any proper goal, without any proper direction. So in order to do that, he requested Kapila Muni what is to be done. So Kapila Muni told him, bring the Ganges water to this world and with their water perform their Udaka Kriya and they will be relieved from their unfortunate condition. So Amshuman came back and started performing penances. He performed penances for a very, very long time and he couldn't do it. And eventually he had to give up this whole effort. Amshuman finished with that. Amshuman couldn't do anything. Amshuman's lifetime was over by then. And he gave up his body and went away. Amshuman's son Bhagiratha took over that responsibility. You can see how many generations starting from Sagara, then Amshuman, and now Bhagiratha. Bhagiratha is trying now to get back that, bring the Ganges here. And that is why eventually Bhagiratha tried extreme penances and austerities. In the end, the Ganges River personified, Gangadevi appeared in front of him. And she told Bhagiratha two things, that I have no desire to come to this earthly planet. But if I do come, what worries me, he said, there is a species called human beings there, in this earthly planet. They will do everything nonsense. And they will come to me and bathe me and pollute me with their all the filth what they do. This was the first concern she had. Second concern was, when I come down, because earlier, if you remember, in Vamana incarnation, Ganges have come from when the Karanarnava Jalam, when the shell of the universe was broken by Vamana Murti, through that hole, Karanarnava Jalam flown into the heavenly planets, and it stuck there. It didn't come further from there. So it is from there now Ganges has to come here. But when it comes here, somebody has to take that weight, or one has to be very strong to receive that, the power of the Ganges. So who is going to take that? That was the question Mother Ganges raised to Bhagiratha. And he gave Bhagiratha a few days to answer these two questions. Bhagiratha came back, and Bhagiratha thought very seriously for 2-3 days, and eventually came back with the answer. The answer he gave was that when you come to this earthly planet, ultimately to Ganga Devi, he told Mother Ganges, he told her that although you will be polluted by these people, this human species, there is one good thing still there. There is a lot of people there among the human species also who are devotees. And these devotees will come and bathe in you. And when they bathe in you, they will purify the Ganges. So that is why that Srimad Bhagavatam also in many instances says about purification. Purification is actually in Ganges when you bathe. That bathing in itself is what is purifying, is that it is actually those great personalities who have bathed in Ganges who have purified Ganges. It is their purificatory potency that is actually purifying those of us who goes there to pollute that river. So Srimad Bhagavatam is like this. That this was the answer Bhagiratha gave to Ganga Devi. And secondly, before he went to Ganga Devi, he performed penances and pleased to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva agreed to receive Ganges when it comes down to this planet. And that is why if you go to the source of the Ganges, Alaganda and Mandakini, when it begins there, we don't know where it comes from, but it is understood that it is received by Lord Shiva. From his abode, it comes down in the form of Alaganda and Mandakini later. So, like this, this is the story of Sagara Maharshi. And this Sagara's family continues. And Sagara's story, Amshuman and Bhagiratha's story was mentioned. And after that, in that same family, there was another prince known as Krutuparna. That Krutuparna was a powerful king. But he made friendship with another prince from the Nishadha family known as Nala. Nala and Krutuparna, they became very good friends. This Nalast and his wife Damayanti, their story runs into so many chapters in Mahabharata. That's a very interesting chapter. This Nala was specifically well known for his capacity to control horses. That is why his ability was Ashwahadayam. That mantra was known to him. How to manage horses nicely. That was his capacity. So he met Krutuparna, and together they exchanged two mantra. Ashwahadayam was given to him, and Krutuparna was given Ashwahadayam by Nala. And this Nala and Damayanti story is explained after that. And then Krutuparna's dynasty, Krutuparna's family, that is all mentioned. And at the end of that, there is a story of Saudasa. Saudasa was another member of the same royal family who appeared much later. And Saudasa's story is also explained in that chapter later. And then it finishes, and we come through that story to Katwanga. And then from Katwanga, it comes through Raghu, Aja, Dasharatha, and to Lord Ramchandra's story. That is moves on to the 9th chapter. So like this, in each chapter, some of the important kings' names are mentioned. Saudasa has done also some horrible things. And how things can develop in one's own life, that Saudasa's story is very interesting. Saudasa was actually, one day he was hunting in the forest. And there were Rakshasas in the forest, two Rakshasas, they were brothers. So by chance, in the fight, he killed one of the Rakshasas. So the other one wanted to take revenge on Saudasa. So what did he do? He decided to somehow or the other, in a clever way, get him cursed by Vasishtha Maharshi. So what did he do? He changed his dress and he came to the palace and got the job as a cook in the kitchen of the king's, in the king's palace. That means in Saudasa's palace, he managed to get the job of a cook in the palace. And later on, one day, when they were serving food to the great sages, deliberately, this Rakshasa who was hiding and the brother of the other one who was killed, he deliberately served human flesh to Vasishtha Maharshi as a food, as a prasadam, it was offered to him, the human flesh. And Vasishtha Maharshi saw that, and with his knowledge, he was able to think what has happened. So immediately he cursed the king for doing this. He cursed the king, Saudasa, that you become also a Rakshasa. Because Rakshasa are flesh eaters. Human flesh they eat. That species probably don't exist now, but it was coming to extinction. It's one of the species who are coming to extinction, it looks. So this curse was given by Vasishtha Maharshi to Saudasa. But Saudasa was going to curse him back because he didn't know anything about it. It was this Rakshasa who has done all these things. So immediately, Saudasa decided to curse him back, took the water in the hand and started chanting the mantra and wanted to throw prakshanam, as it's called, to throw it on Vasishtha Maharshi. Before he did that, his wife Madayandi came up and told him not to do it. So what did he do? He has to throw. Already the chanting has been done. Mantra has been chanted. Water has to be shown somewhere. So he threw it on his own feet. The result was that both his feet changed its color. It became black and red. And therefore he is known as Kalmashapadan. Because of the special colors he has got for his feet. He didn't do that because his wife instructed him not to do it. But by now, Vasishtha Maharshi came to understand that this was not actually the mistake of Saudasa, but it was actually the mistake of this Rakshasa who was hiding in the kitchen and doing this nonsense. So at that point, Vasishtha Maharshi pulled back his curse, but told him, now that I have given the word, you have to suffer for at least 12 years as a Rakshasa. So Saudasa has to accept the body of Rakshasa for 12 years and wandering around in the forest in the form of a Rakshasa, he had to wander around. During that time, one couple, a Brahmana couple, husband and the wife, they were performing their Vanaprastha ashram in the forest. They come to the forest and they were in their Vanaprastha time. And it was then that Saudasa saw this. Rakshasa was naturally wanted to eat him. The Rakshasa quality came out straight away. The Brahmana's wife pleaded with him not to eat him, but he wouldn't listen. He even told him that he is one of the devotees of Vishnu, he is a Vaishnava, don't eat him. What the Brahmana's wife told him, but he wouldn't listen. But he ate him also. The result was that the Brahmana's wife, ultimately took all the bones of the Brahmana after eating and he put it in the funeral pyre. And when the pyre was burning, she jumped into the fire and gave up her body. So when she was giving up her body, she cursed Saudasa that even when you are coming back to your normal life, you will never be able to have a relationship with your wife because that is what you have done to me. And she being a great devotee and a chaste wife, her words had to come true. So Saudasa got back his human form after 12 years. But when he came to the human form, he could not go back to his wife again because she came to know about this curse. Because the moment they have a relationship, immediately he has to die. So Madayandi, Saudasa's wife, prevented him from approaching her. So Saudasa had to live like that, in that form, without having a wife, without any relationship with him. In that family, that has been a further... So eventually, his wife could not have any children, because the moment they have a relationship, Saudasa has to leave the body. So the only option left was that there is a situation in Vedic system called Putriya Dharma. Putriya Dharma means the king has decided to ask somebody else to impregnate his wife, to have a son from his wife. So accordingly, our Saudasa asked Vasishtha Maharshi to have a child from his wife. And that is how from Madayandi and Vasishtha Maharshi had a child who was known as Ashmaga. Why he was called Ashmaga? Ashmaga means that after she became pregnant, she couldn't have the baby. For many, many years, 7 years it took for the child was in the belly of the mother. And eventually, Vasishtha Maharshi took a stone and cut the belly and took the child out. And that is how the boy came out and that is how that dynasty continued, the Solar dynasty continued. And their son like that. And the next boy who was born, he was going to be killed by Parashurama. Parashurama wanted to kill all the Kshatriyas in this world. In that process, he was going to kill them. But at that time, what happened was, a group of women stood around him and protected him from Parashurama's weapons. and therefore he is called Nari Kavachan, one who is protected by women. So all these stories are there, and then it goes on further from there. So briefly, this is the story of the Solar Dynasty. Now we will move on to the Lord Ramchandra story next class. And if there is any questions, please. Yes. Yes.
So before he entered the union, he had that desire of the household?
No, he got that desire when he saw the relationship between the fish in the fish species. When he saw them enjoying together, that desire came up in his mind. It was at that point that desire came up in his mind. In Bhagavatam, that Garuda story is not mentioned. That was come in a later way. That is, Garuda had... Garuda comes in because Garuda could not go there. Because Saubari has cursed Garuda that he cannot approach that place. And Saubari was underneath the water performing the penances. But the desire for family life came up at that point when he saw the fish enjoying together their family life. From seeing their family life, he got disturbed in his mind. So in Bhagavatam it doesn't talk about that in depth, but generally it says that, only trying to point out that what can happen is that if one does not control one's mind, all these things are there to take your time away in life. In other words, these are all obstacles in the path of spiritual life. That's what it's trying to say.
Just a small question. You know, Ganges water, you said that when it was coming down, the human being would be polluting.
Yes. Yeah, but what Ganges was saying was that human beings will come and bathe in me, and they will throw all their dirt on me. Why should I take it? That was her attitude. And I do not want to carry their filth all the time. But Bhagiratha told her that it's not all the human beings are filthy. That there are people, personalities, and example given is Vidura, personalities like him. They will bathe in Ganges and they will purify you from all this contamination, from the sinful people. Because sinful activities, nobody wants to associate with, isn't it? Even if it is demigods, they don't want to see sinful people. Sinful people are always a cause of distress. And therefore, Mother Ganges did not want to have that association with the sinful people of this world. So, it is spoken in such a way in the Bhagavatam to give the understanding that when Ganges purifies somebody, what does that purification mean? Purification is because one thing, it has come from Karanarnava Jalam, when Krishna Vamanamurti broke the shell of the universe, it came from the spiritual world. That Ganges, number one. Number two, when Lord Shiva accepted that on his head, he became Shiva. Otherwise, he was not known as Shiva. Only by receiving Ganges on his head, all auspicious things happened to him. Number two. Number three, Mother Ganges is pure because of the great personalities who, starting from, if you take from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu upwards, all these great, great souls, they bathe in Ganges. So they purify Ganges. That Tirthi Kurvandi Tirthani, it says. It is they who purify Ganges, not us. We go pollute that and they go and purify that. This is the process, how it works. So that's what the point it is making there. Ganges did not want our association. So she said, no, we don't want them. But Bhagiratha said, please come, let them also take your shelter, because you will be purified by the great souls, all the great, great devotees who bathe in Ganges. And they will purify you. So that's the benefit we have. So it's their mercy, Gangadevi's mercy to us, that she has allowed us to bathe.
Just a small question. Either in the morning when we do aarti and when we do deity service and we take achman, is it advisable to put a drop of Ganges in the achman cup to purify ourselves?
No, generally when you do achamanam, you have to recite these prayers. Gangeja Yamune Jaiva, Godavari Saraswati, Narmade Sindhu Kaveri, Jalesmin Sanidhim Guru. All these great rivers, holy rivers, you are invoking their presence in the water. So automatically it's purified when you do that. So there is no necessity that you have to take separately Ganges water. Any water will do. Once you recite these prayers, it purifies for achamanam purposes. No, the it has always been like that. You see, if you look the whole route of Ganges from the beginning right up to join in the Ganga Sagar in Calcutta before it joins, all along, the whole Vedic culture is centered around that, isn't it? The if you take it, sacrifices, Vedic sacrifices were performed in Brahmavartam. The area between Ganges and Yamuna, two rivers, that is known as Brahmavartam. That area is very special because that's the place where all the sacrifices were done. If you start from the top, coming through Haridwar, Rishikesh, Prayag, Allahabad, all that places, these were the places where the great, great souls spend their time when they had. For example, take Sri Rajarya Swamiji. He spent his time in Banaras writing his commentary on the Bhagavata. Like that, there is endless list. Akrura came from Dwaraka, lived in Kashi, Banaras. He built up Banaras so that devotees could bathe there. That was Akrura's special mercy to the devotees. He had so much wealth at that time because of the Samantaka jewel. Every day it was giving 8 kilos of gold, and it was so much money that he was able to build all these ghats in Banaras. So like different times in the history, different personalities came, and they were all at some time or the other were closer to Mother Ganga. And Ganges had also had the good fortune as the mother of Bhishma Dev, Bhishma Pitamaha's mother. So, in history, if you look back, there's nobody else has such a history like Gangadevi. Her history is so powerful and big. So, all I can say is that that Vedic culture, Ganga, Gangadevi, Bhagavad Gita, Gayatri, Ganga Gita Abhi Gayatri, Abhija Tulasi Gam, Gobiga Chandanam, Salagramam, Parapurusha Egadashi, and the holy name. These eight things are especially significant for a devotee. Bhagavad Gita, first of all, Ganges water, Bhagavad Gita, Gayatri, Tulasi Devi, Ganga Gita Abhi Gayatravya Tulasiya, Gobiga Chandanam, Gobi Chandanam, Salagramam, Egadashi, and the holy name. These eight things. It's considered to be especially important because all these eight things can elevate a person in Kali Yuga much faster than any other time. So from that point of view, Ganges has a special position in this age. So like this, everywhere Ganges is glorified, so you cannot say anything more than that. I mean, all the Acharyas write about Ganges. They are glorified and so powerful about the glorification of Mother Ganga that like Krishna gave a special benediction to Yamuna. But Ganges has got a benediction from Krishna even before that. Yamuna got glorified only at the time when Yamuna allowed Vasudeva and Devaki, Vasudeva to take Krishna, baby Krishna, across the river. That was the point when Krishna gave the benediction to Yamuna. And later on, when Kaliya was thrown out from Yamuna, that time Krishna gave a benediction to Kaliya. So, but that is all recent stories. But Ganges stories goes much beyond than that. It has come from the spiritual world. So it has a still higher position. But both these, Ganges and Yamuna, both these rivers are particularly significant, and bathing those rivers purifies one spiritual position. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Next Sunday we'll have, yeah.